Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, your most supported our frontline workers this Movember.
I want to tell you about the IRFU Charitable Trust and a new initiative that they have going, irfucharitabletrust.com/friends. Since 1978, the IRFU Charitable Trust has worked tirelessly to assist severely injured rugby players in their everyday lives. And now they're asking you to become a friend. Obviously, with the restrictions this year on meetups, it's been difficult for charities to run the traditional events that they would have used as their fundraising initiatives. Now, from the comfort of your own home, you can get involved. So without the ongoing support of our rugby friends and their generosity, the Trust says, life-changing initiatives for our seriously injured players could not be realised. Funds raised from our Friends programme help with everyday needs such as wheelchairs and physical therapy, but also contribute to major initiatives including the ongoing research to spinal injury treatments, prostheses and medications promoting nerve cell regeneration. So your friendship and generosity helps our seriously injured players live their lives to the full. And I've got some more details here. So check out rfucharitabletrust.com. You just pay an annual subscription and you can start your journey as a friend. At the moment, they have 100 individual friends and they're trying to get that to 1,000 by the end of the year. They have 14 rugby clubs. So if you're a member of a rugby club, you can sign up your rugby club as well. They're hoping to get to 60 rugby clubs. And they have 16 rugby schools. They're hoping to get that to 60 by the end of the year as well. So it's a big drive and it's a big important fundraiser for the Charitable Trust and hugely important that and we're delighted to support. And I'm also delighted to say Gordon Darcy is here this morning. He's currently an ambassador for them. Gordon, good morning to you. How are you?
Not too bad. You got me in the middle of the school run.
Yeah.
But happy to come on and say hello.
Yeah. And look, just very briefly, the Charitable Trust is something that I know that the players are always very happy to give back to because it's always something in the back of your mind. You've seen players and former teammates suffer fairly serious injuries along the way. It's a brutal sport when things go badly, and it's very important that we highlight the fact that the Charitable Trust exists.
Yeah, listen, without a shadow of a doubt, and, you know, 36 players in Ireland that need this service. And you know, it is the contact sport, and unfortunately sometimes things don't go well. It's terrible that this charity has to exist, but I think there's plenty of people who will give testament to the fact that they're delighted that it does exist. But like with anything, we need people to support it. And this is you know, something born out of the pandemic, which is fantastic. The friends of the Charitable Trust. It's a great idea, and you know, hopefully people can get behind it, and the people who do receive and do benefit from this are really, really, really need it.
Yeah, and 100%. And as I said, we're delighted to support it. Gordon, the graphic flashed up there, 82 Irish caps. We had Matt Williams on last night talking about maybe Ireland could consider a Matt Gitto rule. You would have qualified under the criteria where you could have gone away for a season or two at the end and had some fun, maybe earned a few quid, and still been able to play for Ireland. What's your take on that and just how inflexible we are at the moment?
Like, I think we have to be realistic on that as well. I don't think we're ever going to be able to compete with the salaries. I think the way the structures in Ireland are set up, it provides a balance to players. You will be afforded a longer career in Ireland than if you do go abroad, and you will be looked after better. But there is a quid pro quo to that. Success in Ireland can mean European Cups. It can mean, you know, playing for your country, and going abroad. You know, in theory, it's one of those things. It's very easy to argue and say, it'll broaden the player base, but that's not necessarily. That's, you know, it's unproven. You know, these things to say just to go and do it. I think we need our best players playing here. I think when you look at all the provinces when the internationals are away, the big name draws. When they're not there, the stadiums aren't as full. So I think if you dilute the player base even more, you may struggle to fill stadiums.
Okay, so there's a balancing act to be struck with regards to...
I think there has, with everything, yeah.
It kind of comes off the back of, so Glasgow have apparently approached Ben Healy. We don't know, they haven't come out formally and said it because that's not how these things work. And apparently there are some Scottish ancestral links that would allow him to qualify for Scotland. It's a nightmare scenario where in 2 years' time, Ben Healy is starring a 10 for Scotland and beating Ireland. That's kind of the worst case scenario. And I'm sure that there's agents involved here somewhere along the way saying that this is a potential outcome of this. It is a difficult job to make sure that we keep the Ben Healy's and make sure that he gets game time for Munster, and at the same time.
Yeah, but I don't even think necessarily this is an Irish conversation yet. And I think we have to, you know, you're talking about Dan McFarland talking about the young speedster up north and saying, listen, we need to afford this kid time to grow into the position and into his skill set, into his body. Exact same for Ben Healy. He has to grow. Everything we're seeing now is saying, yes, this is a guy who deserves investment. And we need, Munster desperately need to keep him. I've been incredibly critical of the over-movement of players around Ireland. And Indigenous players need to see a pathway into the provincial teams. And Ben Healy and Craig Casey are exemplary examples of that. So they have to be kept in Munster for Munster to survive as a club. And should he develop into the player that we're seeing sprinklings of every week, then that's going to be a fantastic conversation and a fantastic selection headache for the Irish coach. But first and foremost, we have to keep Munster Indigenous players in the country.
Yeah, and I guess this is all part of the conversation that's going on about where we are at the moment with regards to the professional playing stock. And essentially, in the aftermath of the press conference this week with David Nusafour in your column yesterday, I kind of feel like this is all part of it. It's his remit to make sure that the playing stock is managed properly and those contracts are managed properly. And with the pandemic, none of the contracts for the outgoing players have been signed yet or agreed yet. You made the point that it'll be a very anxious Christmas for a lot of very experienced players who have kids, who are coming to the end of a deal and who are thinking, should I sign a new deal in England and just lock something up because I have a mortgage and my kids are very young and I'm probably, you know, I have one contract left, maybe two.
Well, there's a financial reality to life, and at some point there is, I think, like probably what you're putting out there, is that there's a tipping point between staying and representing, you know, being the one club man and represent and fighting for a place for the Irish jersey, and then that economic reality of you saying, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be offered. But I am being offered something in France, and I know of one of the players in the national team that French clubs haven't changed how they're doing things. They like to have their squads finished by the end of January. So if we're only starting our negotiation in January, you kind of wonder, you know, in the absence of certainty or clarity, you know, you can if you can get it somewhere else, it possibly could be hard to say no. And I understand there's a financial, that's been touted as the financial, you know, we're still assessing the organization. You know, I find that one a little bit hard to understand, because any organization that, you know, that I've been involved in or would expect an organization the size of the IRFU to have done fairly robust modeling on what revenue, good, worst and best case scenarios for 2021. I'm not sure where the ambiguity around all this. It does feel like a little bit like a negotiation tactic.
Yeah. I couldn't help coming to the conclusion when I read your piece yesterday that you don't really think David Nusafour is doing a good job. Do you think it's time for us to look at a different system, or should we be looking to move on from Nusafour at this point?
No, I think, you know, it's very, you know, you have to put, trying to put an awful lot into a few words. I think what the problem with this is, one of the problems is that there is an absence of what his remit is. And it's very, very loose. And, you know, what are his performance? What does success look like? That was one of the lines we used yesterday. What does success look like for David Nusafour? Because the media and most people that would take a keen interest in this are not that clear on it. There's been a lot of movement of players in around the provinces in that, you know, New Zealand-esque model. Has that been a success? The review from the Rugby World Cup has not been openly shared. It's been addressed, and we have to take a word for people, you know, if you take people's word from that. There's just, you know, you know, one of the things I'm very used to was with Joe was around clarity. You may not always like the clarity, but once you have it and once you're being upfront about things, it's easier to, you know, to critique and to move on from it. But I do feel we're being largely left in the dark with a lot of this.
Yeah, so the bits of the World Cup review that came out certainly seemed to suggest that it was Schmidt's fault. There was a bit of blame for Enda McNulty. And it was interesting to me when the photographs came out where Nusafour was actually in coaching gear. I didn't realise that his role was kind of on the field of play at coaching sessions as well. That was a bit of a surprise to me when I saw that. So he's obviously deeply involved. Now, I presume he's not actually doing coaching. He's keeping an eye on what the coaches are doing and trying to assess that. But there definitely doesn't seem to be that much clarity about what the role is. Like, is it your instinct that we don't have, that maybe the role is the right role, but that we just don't know that, and that an open and transparent discussion around that would be useful? Or do you actually think that we're not doing a good job when it comes to that side of the game at the moment?
I don't think it's being done particularly well. Like, I think, you know, if the, you know, the Leinster Schools game covers up an awful lot of the shortcomings in some of the other provinces. You know, we talk about this pathway into elite rugby, and, you know, the club game has to be the, you know, the main underdeveloped resource in the country. And where is that? You know, the whole thing has to knit together. So the role is the right role, but that open conversation and that open clarity around it needs to be detailed to the people that care and the stakeholders, because, you know, media are a stakeholder in this, fans are a stakeholder in this, and the clubs and the supporters, everybody are in it. Every job has a job description, and every job has those key performance indicators or the yardsticks that they're judged by. You know, everybody would just like to understand what they are and have a better understanding of them.
How do you repair that disconnect between someone like David Nusafour and the grassroots of Ireland, if they are the things that ultimately will lead to high performance and to success at high performing levels? How do you repair that disconnect?
I think that's, you know, this isn't a you know, a public caning of David Nusafour. You know, this is where a part in the problem. Does that fall under his remit or not? And if it not, who does it fall under? Where is the development of the, you know, the pathway from the club game into the professional game? You know, because, like, how many clubs? 250, 230 plus clubs in the country. Has every club got an international representing them? Like, these things, you know, you go down to any underage club, you know, last year or in the years coming, and you will see a couple of hundred kids there every week. You know, what coaching are they getting? Is it the same quality? These are all the bits that, you know, we just need to understand. And that probably is moves away from the, you know, the David Nusafour point. But I do believe they all are integrated, and an integrated approach is probably desirable than the alternative.
Yeah. Can we talk about the actual quality of play that you're seeing on the field at the moment? And we've obviously been talking about it a good bit on the show over the last couple of months. Like, what is the identity of Ireland under Andy Farrell going to be? And I don't really know just yet. I think he needs a little bit more time, given the lack of access that he's had and all that. But at the same time, it'd be good to start seeing some signs.
Yeah, like, I think one of the things, like, we have to fundamentally accept is there's a big transition piece going on. One, in the actual squad, and then second, in the style of play. So, you remember, we had quite spoilt with having a Devon Toner in a squad for the last 10 years. And regardless of how good your thrower was, you had somebody at 6'10" and, you know, pretty easy to lift, which, not saying that it did mask, but could potentially have masked any shortcomings in a lineout. We now have two good-sized second rows in Ian Henderson and James Ryan. but we don't have that banker in there. Rory Best, you know, one of the probably the best scrummaging hookers that's ever, you know, that has played for Ireland. There's been a, you know, Jack McGrath, James Cronin in Munster are not playing at the moment as well. So are not playing well, and Killer's not playing, and Jack's, you know, fighting for his position up north. So that kind of meaty pack isn't there, and anything you want to build off of that is going to, and we've fallen down in the set piece massively. So any involvement of our game plan is going to be harder to do that with a misfiring set piece. I think they can solve that in the short term, but I kind of feel that the game plan that we're playing at the moment, there is an awful lot of theory based in on that hasn't been tested in the, you know, in against the Englands, against you know, France, New Zealand. They're a real strong opposition, and I think we got a fairly good yardstick of where that game, the limitations of the way we were trying to play against England. I think this week, if we get some growth on the game plan and see some of those, a little bit more accuracy, and it's going to be a little bit, and I think we have to accept it's going to be around kicking and set piece. If we get those strong fundamentals and we see some of that involvement of that second line, second wave attack that they are starting to play, then that's progress for me.
So you can see signs of that in games against lesser opposition, that Mike Catt, there are some imprints of what he's trying to do on the game plan. What is it? Like, what?
Like they definitely are trying to create opportunities by getting it to the width, and there's that kick and pass options on the wide, and just getting their game breakers onto the ball, which is around your Stockdale and Bundiaki, getting on them in situations where they talked about, like they've said what it is, it's heads up rugby, but that is quite existential in a lot of ways, because that is just creating mismatches. But to play heads up rugby, you need a strong set piece, and we do not have a strong set piece at the moment. So should they be able to repair that, we'll get a better understanding of what they are trying to achieve. And I said, just to like this labour this point on the transition period, all the players talked about the over detail and the level of detail that Joe Schmidt provided for players and demanded of players, which is fine until it's taken away. And now if you're actually putting a bit of responsibility back on players and they have to think their way out of problems and solutions, that doesn't happen overnight. That's going to take that is going to take a lot of games. And I think and I hope we're feeling and seeing that pain now, with a view to 2021 players understanding, like Ross Byrne, for example, will have taken that game against England, gone back, looked over every decision and gone, could I have done better? Where could I have kicked? Where could I have not have kicked? How would I have managed my forwards? How could I have kept them on the front foot? How could we have made England play with the ball because England didn't want the ball? All those things need to happen.
That's an interesting point you make there about the Joe Schmidt coaching, that it does seem that this way of, I guess, empowering the players, allowing them to make the decisions, is more in line with how the coaching team at Leinster are operating. It's not a pre-programming of the players, and I guess at test level they're just trying to get used to that.
Yeah, I think so. And I would say the same with the other three provinces as well. Munster are definitely, it's like the end of the Pro 14 season last year has just lifted a weight off their shoulders, and they're suddenly playing, you know, obviously some good Simon Delande has been very impressive for them, but they're playing a really, really nice game of rugby. Casey is playing with tempo, Healy's managing the game, Scannell, all these guys are coming in and they're playing. We got some, you know, Coombs coming in at number 8. They're playing quite an enjoyable brand of rugby. So when the Munster players do go back to that, what we do now need to see is that transition for all these players when they go back to the provinces, that they continue to play. We know the Leinster players are challenged continuously, that the Munster, Connacht and Ulster players, when they go back, that they absorb that type of rugby, that heads up and that play what you see type of rugby, and they bring it back to the national team, and the national team can harness them, because we know that it's almost impossible to do that type of coaching in a national team, because you only get them for such short blocks. You need them to be doing it, living it every day.
And at least they are in the provinces, and you can see how that would make sense to bring that to national level. And you can see as well in a post-COVID, post-vaccine, when we all get them, that actually Andy Farrell can go and spend a week with the provinces and like see what's happening and learn a bit more about them. And that's where I'm kind of willing to give him a little bit of time. I don't know if everybody else.
Well, I am as well, because the other thing as well is, sorry, not to Jared, not to cut you off, is the game plan has to iterate with the players that are playing it. And I think we're seeing that now, and we have to see the capabilities. We're seeing Doris now coming in at 8, how well him and CJ Stander are complementing each other. So how we get these people onto the ball, Stockdale has to, he's our most potent threat. The game plan has to evolve to suit the players that are taking the field. And that takes time, unfortunately. We would love to have a silver bullet, much the same way we'd love with COVID. We don't. It will be incremental improvement over time.
I did want to ask one last thing, and it kind of ties before we get to your book, about Finlay Beelam is getting moved from one side of the scrum to the other. I do feel like that is definitely the bit where you're looking at your national, professional, whatever David Newsafora's gig is, and going, come on, why am I still making these changes in the week of a game for somebody and seeing if he can play international test rugby out of position? Come on.
Yeah, like that's whatever about Andrew Porter, you know, that, and I would put my hand up, I'm very, very limited on technical scrum knowledge. If that is a tight head experiment that needs to continue, I put my hand up, but I don't see it going the other way. You know, there are plenty of players in those positions that deserve to be playing in their natural position. You know, Dennis Buckley probably isn't delighted in Connacht. You know, I think it's Eric O'Sullivan up north and James Cronin in Munster, you know, that are experienced, established loose head props. You know, that you know, again, is hard to, you know, it's hard to understand at the moment.
Yeah, and look, you know, I mean, if you're the coach, you're doing what you can to get your wins, but you hope that the pipeline is there, and that's supposed to be somebody else's gig as well. So, it is Christmas time. Yeah. Your second of your trilogy is out, Godfather 2. It's called Blue Thunder. Is it better than the first one?
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. It picks up nicely off the second one. So Joe Schmidt is the Leinster coach, and he comes in and. Thankfully, Paul Howard was able to help get what was in my head down on paper. Can Leinster turn it around? At the start of the book, they're watching. Everybody's a Munster supporter, and Leinster still have hopes to win a Heineken Cup. But there's a lot of road to go. A lot of fun things have to happen for me working in McWonderburger to hopefully winning a Heineken Cup with Joe Schmidt and the Leinster team.
I mean, people forget now, that actually happened, where the whole country were Munster fans.
Yeah. So when we were writing this up, and you know, Paul, was a sports journalist, so he had a good handling on it. But like, I was in Wexford, and you know, in the starting playing for Leinster, and at that time, Munster were the dominant team in Ireland, and about to be the most dominant team in Europe for, you know, the next 7 or 8 years. Majority of people, they support success, and they supported. They supported Munster, you know, and that's my home, you know, county. But Leinster had to. We had a very clear identity as a Dublin-based team, and credit to Mick Dawson and to everybody that's been involved with Leinster since. There was a huge push to move it into an all-province county, or all-province club, and we did that. But we had to fight for our supporters, and that comes across in the book. And it was, you know, it was fun because, you know, the Leinster thing is pretty funny. And then obviously this is it's a kids' book, so it's not just purely for boys. There's Aoife, the character in it as well, is fighting the good fight about. Is involved in the 20 by 20 women's campaign. So Aoife's character has more challenges as she's fighting for parity in the women's game.
And I mentioned it's a trilogy, so you get finished the second one, you think, oh, okay, great, I can relax for a little while now, and then straight back into work for the third one.
Yeah, well, like, we've a good relationship with Paul, so I started bothering him a couple of weeks ago with some ideas, but because we did most of the planning in the first book, that we can we kind of have set the rules for the universe that the book exists in. So now we just have to map out the story and put the bits and pieces in it. And like Penguin are absolutely amazing, and Alan Nolan does the illustrations, and he gets it straight away. So it's really good, and we really do hope that people enjoy it.
Well, listen, congratulations on it. It's called Blue Thunder. It's the second book of Gordon's Game. The third book, I guess, is out in time for next Christmas, but gets the full thumbs up from my 9-year-old too. So Gordon, great to have you with us. Thanks a million.
Thanks very much.
It's Gordon Darcy there, who was appearing today as an ambassador for the IRFU Charitable Trust, who I would remind you are just asking you to become a friend. You can donate. IRFUCharitableTrust.com is the website, and it is life-changing research for people who have suffered injuries and support for people who have suffered injuries playing rugby. 0879 180 180 is the number here. It's a minute past nine. OTBAM is live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead.
Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTBAM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
OTBAM.
With Gillette, your most supported our frontline workers this Movember. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.